Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Thursday, January 21st. 2021, 13 and a half minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program, and we are off and running on another day here in the month of January. Now, there are a few things I want to do here before we get to our first guest, who I believe will be joining us momentarily. I do want to wish a happy birthday today to one of our pals here at the station who I host a show with every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m., Angie Evers. Happy birthday today. It's a big day for Angie, so I hope she's out there listening. Happy birthday to you. She really is the best. Just the nicest, kindest person you would ever want to meet. Goes out of her way to do nice things for other people. Just a really, really nice person. So happy birthday, Angie. Today, I hope you have the best birthday possible. Now, I also want to thank Phil Donahue for coming on yesterday. He was on for 2 hours with us, and we had a lot of fun with Phil, so we thank him for that. And we're going to continue on this morning here on WWGH Radio as we head to our first guest, although we got to do a little bit of housekeeping. Again, I want to thank Phil Donahue, legendary talk show host, who started in Dayton, Ohio, many, many years ago now, back in the 1960s. Phil doesn't do a whole lot of interviews, but he was kind enough to come on with us yesterday for the entire two-hour program on Inauguration Day, and we can't thank Phil Donahue enough. He's become a good friend of this program, and Phil, next time I'm in New York, we will get that Starbucks coffee on him, he said yesterday. He said that on the air, so coffee with Phil Donahue next time I'm in New York, so certainly we thank him for coming on. And then coming up next hour, we have the Queen of Helpful Hints. You know her from Good Housekeeping Magazine. She's been in there, I believe, now for well over 30 years, best-selling author. Heloise will be on to give us tips for Valentine's Day. And, of course, Heloise is on every third Thursday from 9:10 until 10 a.m. Now, our first guest this morning, as I say, has a little bit of a tie-in to Phil Donahue because of the city of Dayton, where Phil started many years ago. We've never had her on the show, but boy, we're glad to have her this morning for the first hour because there's a lot to talk about the day after inauguration and a lot to talk about going on here in Ohio right now. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones for the first time the mayor of the city of Dayton, Nan Whaley. Nan, how are you?
Good morning. Great to be on and great to hear from you. So glad to be on the show for the first time.
Yep. First time, but hopefully not the last.
I hope not either, exactly. Yeah.
You know, Nan, it's interesting. We had all the pomp and circumstance yesterday of an inauguration that we can have in the middle of a pandemic. What did you make of yesterday as a whole?
Well, I thought showed a tremendous amount of hope, and I appreciated the president's call for unity for our country. I think, you know, we live, and it's no secret, we live in a very divided country where people have very different experiences, but the vision that Joe Biden has to really see us all as one America, I think, is really important. And as we look at what happened in 2020, I think everybody is one thing. They are exhausted from the division. And so calling for us to sit in other people's shoes, understand different perspectives, be a little nicer to each other, I think is an aspirational goal for our country. And I think it's one that could save our democracy.
You know, Nan, this division that has existed in the Congress, has existed in the Senate, has existed with presidents in the past, and has trickled now down to society, everyday society, who we vote for, what we do, what we believe. You know, this has been going on now for, my goodness, nearly 20 years. How do you think it got started, and why has it stuck?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I was thinking this morning that the division did start around 20 years. I remember that election and, you know, thinking of just how, you know, divided even the state was then. And 20 years ago, Scott, you would see, you would really see your neighbors having different opinions than you did. And so you really knew it was out there. I think what has happened now is we are seeing more of a sorting of sorts around our belief system, political beliefs, and that's put people in silos and kind of these circular loops where you only hear what you agree with, and you only have to listen to what you agree with, and it actually takes effort to find something that you disagree with, because we've been able to narrow cast our news and our information in a way that is self-fulfilling. And I think that has just exasperated the division. It takes effort right now to find someone that you disagree with. And I think that is, I think that's a real issue moving forward for our country.
Working as an active politician, mayor of Dayton, when you come across a Republican or maybe even a Democrat who just doesn't feel the same way you do on a certain issue, how do you bridge that gap in Dayton?
Well, I mean, I think the key is to listen. You know, it's not necessarily that we're going to agree. I remember after the mass shooting we had in the Oregon district on August 4th of 2019, you know, I'm an advocate of gun safety laws and, you know, and pretty common sense laws that, you know, 9 out of 10 Americans agree with. But I did have some folks that called and asked to meet with me one-on-one, probably about 3 or 4 different people. Some lived in the city of Dayton, some lived in the area, and met with every single one of them and really, you know, listened to their position around guns and actually found that we had more in common than in disagreement. And I really appreciated that, you know, citizens were willing to reach out to their elected officials and have those conversations. And I could tell it was new for some of these folks to talk to someone they disagree with. And surprising for us to find some common ground. And I think that's really, really important. It's easier, frankly, as a local elected official to do this than a state or national official, because the amount of money and the partisan rancor that just naturally exists in those halls and the further away they are from, you know, the people they govern makes it more difficult. So I find that mayors and local elected officials are much better at this than, quite frankly, our state or national counterparts.
When you were watching on January 6th, which we all were, the breach at the Capitol, what did you make of that?
Well, I mean, I think in a way it was surreal and shocking, but frankly not surprising. And I know that's hard to say, like, it's shocking to me, but not surprising in the same sentence. But, you know, this kind of contempt with an original falsehood, which is that the election was rigged, and that's the kernel, the lie is that centerpiece. And when you have some sort of kernel like that, which really hits at the heart of the democracy, right, that an election was fixed, that breaks down the whole system. You know, people are going to take matters in their own hands. And I try to keep myself in people's shoes. I imagine, you know, I'm an ardent Democrat, and I imagined, okay, what if Joe Biden came out and said the election was rigged, and Senator Sherrod Brown said, I agree with the president? You know, what would I respond to, right? Those are people I greatly respect. I could see marching like many did. And then I think, you know, I don't think people on my side would take arms into a capital or insurrection, but I could understand the anger and the feeling of hopelessness that the democracy was gone, because that's what these folks think. And I really blame the president for that kernel lie that the election was stolen, because it wasn't. And secondly, more so even than the president, I am very angry at the people in the Republican Party that propped up this lie. Because when I talk to congressmen and other folks that know these people, and I say, what do they say in private? And they say, oh, they know it's all bull. Well, you know, words matter, and what you tell the American public matters. And I feel like a lot of elected officials have really lost their way for political power, or hearing or telling people what people want to hear. You know, it's easier sometimes to not believe you lost, but to believe that the game wasn't fair. And I think that is a very big danger to the democracy. Now, Scott, democracy is a core value for me. I've been able to, you know, win and lose elections over 25 years, knowing that, you know, what the people say is the final say. And so this is, you know, a cornerstone of our country. And if we all can agree that every vote is counted, and that, you know, both Democrats and Republicans running these elections are doing their very best, and being fair and transparent, our country is in very big trouble. So that's my concern with the action of the insurrection. It was a long, heated coming, you know. It was 2 months after the election, and frankly, even before that, you know, I think Donald Trump knew that he was in trouble in this election and started laying the groundwork for this lie in the debate, saying that the election was rigged. Think about that. You're running for an election and you don't even believe the system is fair. You don't even think the votes would be. Why would you do that? And then for senators and congressmen like Jim Jordan to propagate the lie, I think is very close to treason.
Well, speaking of Jim Jordan, because he is the congressman for a lot of people in the district that is listening to this program right now, what have you made of him?
Well, I don't know him very well. We have a very different view of what America looks like, and I think his view is pretty parochial. You know, he comes from an area that's north of Dayton, you know, near Rushi, called Rushi, and I don't think he was raised or near much diversity at all. And you know, I wasn't either. You know, and I come from a small town in Indiana and moved to Dayton, and really, you know, Dayton was where, you know, I got the opportunity, and really am grateful for the opportunity to live in an inclusive community and experience the value of diversity in my city. But, you know, Jim Jordan hasn't experienced that. And so I think, you know, and he hasn't been open to new ideas. I remember every year the Dayton Development Coalition goes to a fly-in in Dayton to Washington, D.C., because we have the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton. And about 190 regional leaders, you know, business leaders, elected leaders go and advocate for Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and the congressmen from the area come and speak. And I think America has a lot of problems, so don't get me wrong, it's not perfect. We're trying to build a more perfect union, so, I mean, always striving to do better. But Jim Jordan got up and said that he knew what the problem with America was, and it was we had an unreasonable willingness to feed everyone, and that people got free food. And I remember thinking, like, this is a guy that I have a very different world view from, because I can think of a lot of problems with America, but making sure that everybody, you know, in a place of such wealth that has, you know, has food. And frankly, the food insecurity I see among young people, particularly during COVID, has been pretty stark. So again, I don't even think that that is true. I think we could do a much better job at it. So certainly Jim Jordan and I have a different view. And, you know, I think that when you listen to him talk about this original lie, he knows what he is selling is not true. And that's what makes it very disappointed. And I'm embarrassed just from Ohio, frankly, because I think he embarrasses us with propagating the original lie.
What did you make of him last week getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom?
Yeah, look, I mean, President Trump had interesting choices for the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It was more based on loyalty to him as a person rather than loyalty to country. That's disappointing, but I'm sure he and Jim Jordan have their reasons of being together, and that's the president's prerogative, frankly.
Mayor, I want to talk about last Sunday because we had this event, protest, and it did turn into a protest at the State House. I was down there covering it right across the street from the grounds of the State House, and there was a lot of a police presence. There certainly was National Guard presence. The protesters only ended up, there were under 100. I'm not sure what the exact count ended up being, but there were protesters walking around with AKs and ARs and that sort of thing. But there was a Black Lives Matter presence there. There was somebody walking around with a Biden-Harris yard sign. There was somebody with a poster that said sore losers go home. So it was, both sides were kind of represented in this. It did turn out being peaceful, but not a big protest in a state that President Trump won by quite a bit. What does that say to you that it didn't, thank goodness it didn't end in any kind of violence, which was a worry, but that the numbers just weren't as big as people thought they would be?
Are you talking, is this last week? Scott,
yeah, the State House, yeah.
I know they had some the few days. I mean, I think the State Houses across the country, you know, after the insurrection at the Capitol, there was a lot of concern about the State Houses in all 50 states. And I think the people organizing these are the extreme militias and some white supremacy groups, and they've really gone underground, what we've seen these past 2 weeks. That doesn't mean they're gone. You know, it's likely that, you know, I think we'll see. And I think most, when I talk to most folks that cover domestic terrorism, they expect us to see, you know, much more like surprise hits from these groups because they're so underground and because they don't have the numbers that surprised them at the insurrection. I think you have to remember, too, and I do believe this, there were many people that went to Washington, D.C. to march because they believed the original lie that weren't interested in storming the Capitol. There is this group of people that are interested in overthrowing the government from the extreme right. And, you know, that's where this is coming from. And because they've lost the ability to organize through social media, I think it will be slower. They're still there, but I think that's, I think, what's going on there.
Since this is the first time we've had you on the program, I want to go back to August the 4th, 2019, a date that I don't think anybody in Dayton will forget. Certainly people in Ohio won't forget, and maybe people in the country won't forget. It was what was deemed a mass shooting in Dayton, Ohio. Take me through that day and the aftermath of it, being the mayor during that time.
So it's certainly a sad day. 2019 was a very difficult year for Dayton. We had actually, you know, this rhetoric of white supremacy has really exasperated during the Trump administration. And so in May, we had folks from Indiana that, you know, came to Dayton, and they were aligned with the KKK to tout white supremacy, and, you know, that really upset our community. I mean, a lot of these people weren't even from Dayton, and so we had to deal with that over Memorial Day weekend, and then 2 days later, we experienced about 15 tornadoes that went through the center city, which, you know, happens because of extreme weather now. You know, tornadoes used to only go in rural areas, and that's, you know, frankly not the case anymore because the weather patterns have gotten so extreme. And then, you know, and then August 4th happened where 9 people were murdered in the Oregon District, which is our entertainment district, and dozens more injured by a delusional man obsessed with collecting and using guns and trying to kill as many people as quickly as possible. He killed those 9 people in 32 seconds. We had 7, Dayton police officers actually in the district. It was around 1 in the morning, patrolling, and if they wouldn't have been there, many more would have died that day. This was shocking to Dayton. Dayton is a city. It's the 6th largest city in the state. It is very diverse. Everybody knows each other and we're connected. And so I think the people that died in the district that day, were from all walks of life. And that's how Dayton is one of a few places that is really, like I was talking earlier, where people have kind of gotten into their silos. Dayton is a very even community. We're about, the county's about 50, like went for Trump in 2016, went for Biden in 2020. The city is about 40% African American. We have an immigrant population. And so, you saw, young white 20 something year old hanging out with his friends who was murdered. You saw a father hanging out with his son who was murdered, died in his son's arms. An immigrant, a refugee that, survived the Sahara Desert to get away from oppression, immigrated to America only to die in the Oregon District on the shooting on August 4th. So, from all walks of life were the stories of these Daytonians who were killed. And that's very different than a lot of the other mass shootings. The Walmart shooting in El Paso that happened the day before was similar to that end, but it was still just the same kind of group of people. Typically when these mass shootings happen, if they happen at a synagogue or a church, it's all one group, or even a movie theater, it's a lot of the similar people. So that's what makes the district so special. And so it was a very difficult time for our community that whole week. The national news descended on us. We were hoping the people of Dayton on that night had a vigil to take over the street that was taken from us that evening before. And when Governor DeWine got up, the crowd started chanting, "Do something." And we're calling for something to change in our gun laws so this doesn't happen anymore. The governor answered with a 17-point plan that he then watered down and then got none of it passed, and then culminating in 2 weeks ago where he went the exact opposite route and actually signed a gun expansion law called Stand Your Ground, which is incredibly dangerous for more likely to affect people of color than white people, and law enforcement across the country, including Ohio, were against it. It's been a pretty disappointing situation since August 4th, because we've seen no movement on gun safety laws.
Why do you think Governor DeWine, why do you think his progression happened that way on Stand Your Ground?
I think the governor has bold thoughts that aren't partisan at the beginning, and he did this with COVID, and he's done it with guns. He starts, I think, in a real common place of trying to protect our communities, but I think he is held hostage by his party and the extreme right, and at the end of the day he'll do whatever he needs to do to placate them. It's incredibly disappointing to watch and to see and to watch our community fail because of it. We've seen this over and over again with him, and I was hoping it wouldn't happen on common sense gun safety, but and I think he knows it's a bad bill, but I think he's just held hostage by his party.
We are definitely in interesting times. The Stand Your Ground law bill signed by Governor Mike DeWine. We've been in this pandemic now almost a year. How do you rate Governor DeWine's handling of COVID and just running the state in general in his first term as governor?
Well, again, I think he started out very strong, but I've seen him be too concerned about his primary and be petered out over the year and past 2 years. So you start with, you know, common sense gun legislation. You know, he starts strong and then it waters down to nothing. And then the same with COVID. You know, he allowed Amy Acton to be chased out of town, and now it's been laid mostly with the locals to figure out. And so, you know, he's really abdicated a lot his responsibility there, particularly around how we need to respond. You know, I think he saw this in May when he called for a mask mandate. All the data shows that masks help curb the disease, and then the next day he folded. But, you know, I called him out on it. I mean, I think that, you know, you have, you know, we're not a direct democracy or representative democracy, and we have to lead through data and, you know, what we know is best. And sometimes popular, but it seems like Governor DeWine can't stand the heat. I think that's my big complaint with him. You add to the fact that you have the largest corruption scandal in the history of Ohio with, you know, him, his family, every, you know, elected Republican, it seems, involved in the mess on First Energy. And you really wonder, like, what's going on in Columbus? Are they really interested in what's happening every day on the ground in Ohio? And I don't think they are. You know, we've had 3 decades of this kind of leadership of Republican rule. And you have to really ask, like, are you better off? How's it going for you in Marion? How's it going for you in Marietta? And I don't think people of this state are better off with this kind of leadership.
Well, you know, it brings up an interesting point, Mayor, because we've talked about Jim Jordan. He wins his elections overwhelmingly. We talk about the government that has been controlled in Columbus and the state by Republicans for 20 years overwhelmingly. We talk about people like Governor DeWine, but also before him we had a Republican, Governor Kasich. Mostly Republican governors in the last 20 years. Sherrod Brown was in there, or not Sherrod Brown, but Ted Strickland was in there, but only for one term. President Trump won Ohio in an election that he lost overwhelmingly. What has happened in Ohio that really we feel like we're not much of a swing state anymore, that we are tending to the conservative Republican side?
Well, I think you mentioned Jim Jordan. I think that's a really good point on what's happened in Ohio. You know, because you've had one-party rule that was actually, in most cases in the state, very closely decided. You know, Governor DeWine, you know, I think won by like 3 points. It's a close race. You know, the state legislature got to write the and draw these lines for Congress and for their state House and state Senate seats. And so it has made our government actually more extreme than what the people of Ohio really are. So, yeah, of course Jim Jordan wins his gerrymandered seat. It's a seat drawn for Jim Jordan. You know, if I got to draw the lines of Dayton, you know, I get to, like, make it whatever I want. And that's what you have right now in the State House and in Congress in Ohio. It should get a little better with the new rules, but they're not amazing. They're not the best in the country as far as fairness. And I mean, I think I really believe, and I mean, I think it bears out that because we have these extreme districts, you have legislators that don't care what people think. And I mean, to the point where they go into caucus, Republicans go into caucus and say, oh, you know, they'll forget about Dayton, so they don't do anything about common sense gun safety, even though 9 out of 10 Ohioans agree, just forget it because they'll forget and we control it. We're the extreme party, but we control it. Or, you know, forget about this scandal where we're all in the mix for racketeering charges and we won't even get rid of Larry Householder, who's indicted by the federal government. He can still serve with us because the Ohioans will forget. There's incredible hubris going on in the Ohio Republican Party and in Columbus, in the State House. And I think at the end of the day, Ohioans are tired of that more than they are party ID.
You know, when it comes to the Democratic Party in Ohio, I've talked to several Democrats throughout the state, And it's interesting because in the last 4 or 6 years, it is true that Governor DeWine only won by a couple points, but people thought, pollsters thought, that Rich Cordray was going to win that election by a few points. That's what we thought going in on Election Day. Democrats don't seem to win in the rural areas. When you look at a map of Ohio after a statewide election, Democrats win in Columbus, they win in Cleveland, they win in Toledo, but there's a lot of red on that map. In the smaller communities, the less populated communities. And David Pepper, who is the head, was the head chairman of the Democratic Party in Ohio, has stepped down. The chairman before him in his lost his own election the year he was the chairman, and he stepped down. Is there a systemic problem with the Democratic Party in Ohio?
I think the Democratic Party in Ohio has work to do. I think what has happened and what we're realizing is that for decades we have been a battleground state, that national folks would parachute in here, try to figure out the state, and parachute out. I think that is gone now, and so it is just really us. And I think the Republicans know that it's just them, too. There's not going to be as much national attention on the state. That gives us, I think, some great freedom to really talk about what we want to talk about, not be as concerned about the national narrative, and really dig down about what's going on with Ohioans. Ohio is different than California, for sure. And so I think it's important for Ohio Democrats to really not worry about Washington, D.C., but worry what's happening in Chillicothe and in Canton and Akron, et cetera. And I think that's a great opportunity we have. I'm excited about that. You know, I believe firmly we can win in Ohio as Democrats. I think our actions and what we want to do are much more in line with those more rural communities, with their pocketbook and the issues that they're concerned about, like quality education, investing in their community. You know, the Republicans of Ohio have had this really terrible idea that they've been working on for 20 years, where they thought if they just gave tax cuts to the very wealthy, that somehow our cities would get stronger. And it's been the opposite. You know, we've seen over their time that their theory of governing doesn't work for Ohio. So I think there's huge opportunity for us in that. I'd also say that states like Kansas and Kentucky have Democratic governors. So they are much more right-wing than Ohio, those states are. And frankly, if they can do it, Ohio can do it too.
You know, yesterday was an historic day for another reason. We saw the first woman vice president ascending to that position, Kamala Harris. But yet here in Ohio, and it's weird to even be talking about this in 2021, but we have never had an elected female governor. Why do you feel that is?
Well, because we haven't nominated a candidate for governor that's been a woman either. Neither party, Democrat or Republican, has chosen a woman as nominee. So it would be hard for a woman to become governor if either party hasn't nominated one. So I think that's, you know, the first step in it. Look, I think Ohio is a really large state, and, you know, as a mayor that is female, there's not a lot of women mayors. There's frankly not a lot of women governors across the country. We're doing better with that, as we see in Kansas and in New Mexico and Maine and Oregon and Michigan. You know, we are making progress on it, but I think it is always more difficult in executive leadership to have people see a woman being that leader. I see this as mayor quite often. But it's time. I mean, it's time for us to have a more broad view of leadership. And again, I think that's going to be key to Ohio's growth. We can keep on doing the same thing over and over again, and we will get the same result. Ohio will get further and further behind, or we can do something different. And I think that Ohioans, frankly, more than anything, are hungry for something different.
You know, Nan, it's interesting because in 2018, the gubernatorial race, it is true that no woman has been nominated by either party to be governor of Ohio, but Mary Taylor was in the primary on the Republican side. She did not win. DeWine won. You were in the primary. You were in the race for a while in 2018. There were some other women on the Democratic side. They didn't fare very well. Why is that? Is it a woman thing or is it something else?
Well, I can't really speak to the Republican Party. I do think Republicans treat women incredibly poorly as leaders. But I think in the Democratic Party for us, the last time there were three women running, and so there wasn't one candidate that was a woman, which I think is important to you know, help coalesce support. I think that had an effect. And, like, look, I mean, we both parties have a lot of work to do on this to get real, you know, diverse leadership. And, you know, women make over half the population, so it's not even like we're talking about a minority issue here. I think, too, you know, for more Ohio history, Scott, there's only been one woman nominee in the history of Ohio for the United States Senate. I don't know if you can name her. I'll tell you if you want to guess, but only one time in the history of Ohio that has happened. And so, you know, this is just something I think women of Ohio need to realize, and some, you know, thoughtful men, and, you know, see if we want to do something different in our leadership. Because I don't think this current way is really working out for Ohioans.
You know, that's it. Who was the female candidate?
You don't know? I thought, because you have such good history, I thought you might know.
Well, I have a few names in my head, but I'm not exactly sure.
It was Mary Boyle for United States Senate in 1998 against George Voinovich.
But do you think? Because this is something that goes on nationally. I mean, Hillary Clinton said that there was misogyny in her race when she ran for president. Do you think people step in the voting booth in any state or for a national election and they go, I am not voting for that person just because they're a woman? Does that happen?
I don't think that's how they think of it. I think that there's different reasons folks tell themselves they're not voting for that person. But, I mean, you know, look, I people ask me, what's it like to be a mayor as a woman, you know, versus a man? And I say, you know, I really can't answer that question because I don't know what it's like to be a man. So this is a hard question to answer, what's in the hearts of folks and their decision making. I'll tell you what, though, we have moved, just 100 years ago, white women were given the right to vote, and even further down the line were black women really given the right to vote because of Jim Crow laws. So, you know, women have made tremendous movement in this country, and it's not perfect. This country is not perfect. The state is not perfect. We're moving towards a more perfect union, and that includes diversity of leadership, diversity of ideas, and new ways and new people leading. I think that's what really emboldened me to see Kamala Harris be sworn in as vice president was a glass-breaking moment. And I'll tell you something else, you know, I'm a second-generation woman leader. I'm not the first generation. And it gets easier for those that get to go behind women that have broke that glass ceiling because they don't have to fit into a certain ideal of leadership. They're able to expand their leadership ideas. And so the more people we have showing the different ways that we can lead with different ideas, the more opportunities we give to others to lead, and also the stronger our communities and country come.
You know, Mayor, it's interesting because next year we will have a gubernatorial race again here in Ohio in 2022. Mm-hmm. People are going to start announcing things, and this election will get underway, I assume, even under this pandemic. We think Governor DeWine will run for re-election. We haven't heard that, but we think he will. That being said, with this groundbreaking moment with Kamala Harris being the first female vice president, you did run in 2018. You are under the age of 50. You certainly are young. You're the mayor of a city that got a lot of attention because of the shooting, and how you handled that, I think, overall was greeted with thumbs up in that particular situation. Will you make a run for governor in 2022?
Well, we're making that decision, of my husband and I, over the next couple of months. I announced 2 weeks ago that I wouldn't be running for re-election of mayor. I've been at City Hall now. This is my 16th year, 8 years as mayor and 8 years on the city commission. And, you know, we're really discerning that in my house right now. So, I mean, you'll hear from me in a few months, I'm sure, but we haven't made that decision fully yet.
Are you leaning one way or another at this point? Not running for mayor, you would be open.
Yeah, I made the decision not to run for mayor. That was a really bittersweet moment for me. This has been an honor of a lifetime for me to be the mayor of such an amazing city. But it's time for new leadership, and I'm really. It was bittersweet 2 weeks ago when we shared that decision. But you know, again, that was a big point for me to make that decision, and so now we're in the process of, you know, making the decisions. What's next? And Scott, I appreciate you telling people that I'm young. You know, I'll be 45 Saturday, so I feel, you know, fully middle-aged. It's hard. You know, I was elected when I was 29 here in Dayton, when everybody said, you know, oh, you're so young, and that was true. So, you know, after, you know, being in government for over 20 years, you feel a little different than young some days. So I appreciate you giving me that accolade.
Why did you decide not to run for mayor again?
Well, I think, you know, I've been at City Hall, like I said, for 16 years, and I've loved it, but I think it was. I think it's always important to really sit, you know, find what's in your belly to really move the next, you know, 4 years. And for me, I didn't feel the fire I did 4 years ago or 4 years before that. And I think it's really healthy for communities to get new leaders with new ideas and new opportunities, just to see it a little differently. And Dayton has not, since the 1980s, the mayor has always run, and the only way that there's been any change in leadership, the mayor has been beaten. And, you know, I just thought it was time to do something a little different, to say, like, hey, I've put my time in here, I've done my very best, I'm going to miss this, but it's time for somebody else. And I'm really pleased with that decision, and the response from the community, Scott, I mean, it's been just really heartwarming. You know, I love this community, and it has been really gratifying to hear from everyone the thankfulness for my time and work. And I mean that is just really affirmed my decision, frankly. So I'm super super pleased. And look, it's time to do something new. You know, I relish growing and learning more, and so I'm excited to, you know, start the next chapter. I just have to, you know, kind of take a break here for a few weeks or a couple months between the chapters on what's next. I'll still fill out my term as mayor, and I'll be the president of the Conference of Mayors the second half of this year, because I really do love working with mayors, but we'll see what's next coming up soon.
And just want to say this, because I certainly understand your wanting to consult with your husband and feel where you want to go next, but I think common wisdom for people who are listening, they're probably saying, she's not going to run for re-election as mayor, she's going to be 45, that's certainly not retirement age, she's run for governor before, she's not particularly happy with the current governor. Why would you not run for governor? I guess let's put it that way. What would be deterring that you would not do it?
Well, I want to see, you know, if there's support for me, you know, and listen to some of the people that I respect across the state. It's a very difficult state, as we've talked about, to run in. And so, you know, I want to be, you know, should I make this decision? I want to be eyes wide open about it. So those are some of the reasons. You know, it is, I mean, people that run for office statewide, regardless of party, that is a considerable investment and considerable sacrifice their entire family makes. So that's important.
And just my last pass at this, because there is some other things I want to ask you about before we let you go. At this point, would you say you're leaning one way or another? More toward running, less toward running?
I don't know yet. You know, I just made the announcement about the mayor's office 2 weeks ago. So we'll see in the coming months. You can have me on in a few months and grill me. How's that?
Well, we might have to do that. That would be a lot of fun to see what's going on. Now, one interesting thing that we kind of glossed over there in 2019 when the shooting happened in Dayton was President Trump did come, and there was kind of a little dust-up there when he came between you and he. What did you make of the president?
Yeah, I mean, the president, it was a surreal moment for sure. He, we got along fine the whole time he was here, and then as soon as he left, he attacked Senator Brown and I. I talked to some Republicans in Dayton, and they said, oh, he was just always going to do that. That was just the MO. And true enough, I talked to other mayors, and they said, oh, yeah, Nan, you know, you have a shooting in your community. He comes and says he's going to do something. He doesn't do anything and moves on. And so this is just standard politics for him. But the sad thing for us, it wasn't, like, this isn't standard for us, right? This is something that, you know, shook our community to its core. And, you know, I wasn't really, you know, playing politics about it, you know, really believed that, you know, this is a nonpartisan issue, gun safety. 9 out of 10 Americans, 9 out of 10 Ohioans want universal background check. You know, it's an example of where the democracy is broken because of moneyed interests and small segments of the population. It's a real tyranny of the minority is happening. And so, you know, that was the challenge for me. Is that we were obviously Donald Trump and myself had very different interests about what that visit was about, and you know that's fine. You know, there when he came, Governor DeWine was very helpful to me during the shooting, and you know we did not want him to come to the Oregon district because the businesses of the district did not want the president to visit there, and I took very seriously. Considering what they'd been through, what they wanted, and it was very clear that the hospital and the victims were interested in seeing him. So, I mean, glad that he went to see the victims. I think that was where he added value, and that was what was important. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we still wanted common sense gun laws, and he wasn't interested in any of that conversation.
Mayor, final question here with a minute left to go. How is Ohio handling the rollout of the vaccinations for the pandemic, and how is the pandemic being handled overall in Ohio at this point?
I think doing okay. I give us a B, B minus. It's going to be very bumpy at the beginning because we just don't have capacity built in public health infrastructure across the state. Again, these ideas of we can do tax cuts for the wealthy has, you know, made us not have infrastructure we need when, you know, disasters like this happen. And so that's been a real curb. The other challenge is from the federal government not getting enough vaccines to get in people's arms fast enough. So, you know, the mayors have talked to the governor regularly about these issues. They've been listening and responding, and we're grateful for that. I think you know, a lot of other states, we hear horror stories about the mayors and governors getting very political on this pandemic. That has not happened here, and I think that's really important. So I think, you know, we all agree in Ohio that the best thing is to get as many shots in arms so we can save lives and get this economy rolling again, and we are all fixated on that.
The guest this morning for the first time on this program has been the mayor of Dayton, Nan Whaley, certainly a big and upcoming name, continuing upcoming name here in Ohio politics. Will not be running for mayor of Dayton again, but who knows what will happen in the next month or two in regard to that. Nan, it's been a pleasure this morning to have you on the program. If you're ever through here, I hope you stop by, and I hope you come back real soon, especially if you have any announcements to make in regard to what your future holds.
Thank you, Scott. I'd do that. I'd love to come to Marion, the city of presidents, right?
So it's a good place to make announcements.
There you go. Have a great one.
Thank you, Mayor. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mayor Nan Whaley. We'll be back with Heloise in about 15 minutes.
Phones Donald Trump. Donald, how are you?
God, how are you?
Doing very well. What a busy week for you, sir.
I have to tell you, I have not slept. I'm very excited. This is going to be a phenomenal convention.